You're listening to Brazen Bookworm's Unrighteous Reading Rebellion, a reformed book snob's journey and musings through all things romance. Some language may not be safe for all ears. Frequent use of sarcasm may occur.
Thank you so much. We're joined today by Samantha Bruntmore and Rose Diorro, and we are super excited to have them joining us because this is like the narrator festival here. We have been loving on audiobooks recently, and having two of our favorites on this is just awesome. So thank you guys so much for joining us. People who've watched us before, they know we're the Stalker Sisters, at least three of us. Susie is at the campground with no power and under tornado watch, so she's hunkering down. But we are talking all things narrators today with Samantha and Rose, and I want to give you guys a chance to introduce yourselves first. So Samantha, go ahead and introduce yourself, please, and let us know a little bit about you.
Yeah, hi, I'm Samantha Bruntmore. I'm an audiobook narrator and voiceover actor. I also am a producer with Brickshop Audio, and I run the podcast with Rose here, the Rosemore Roundtable, where we dig into issues that are specific to the romance audiobook community.
Awesome. Thank you.
And I'm Rose Diorro. I am also an audiobook narrator, primarily romance. I am a theater actor and producer as well, and voiceover actor. And as Samantha said, I'm the other half of the Rosemore Roundtable. And yeah, happy to be here.
Awesome. Thank you
guys so much. So we've got all kinds
of
questions.
Can I already go off the rails?
go for it, Julie. No rails. We have no rails here. It's all squirrels.
Tell us about the Rosemore podcast. How did it like come about and become a thing?
Yeah. So Rose and I spent time together at conventions and working together just as colleagues, producers, fellow narrators, and found ourselves having a lot of different conversations with each other that were, you know, really digging into different subjects and topics. And then I think it was maybe after the Philly convention that we did together, we were talking about like our dreams for a convention, things that mm-hmm. we'd like to see, have, do, whatever. And I think after one of our spiral off the rails conversations,
that happened to be live for other people to listen to.
Those are the best kinds.
Yeah. And then people kept following up and going, okay, well, let's talk about this convention, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the aspects of it was having panel discussions and digging into some deeper issues. And so I think, you know, one of us sent an email and said, okay, crazy idea. What if we just got together and had these roundtable discussions on these issues that we really want to see people talking about that we don't see talked about often? And so it really kind of came from, admittedly, a selfish place of like, I want to talk to these people about these questions. And it's been really wonderful, I think, for both of us to see how well received it's been, and also to see how it's so many different communities that are a part of the romance community are really finding it beneficial. It's really great to see how much fans of the genre are learning a lot about different aspects, but also fellow narrators and authors and producers have really taken a lot of the conversations we have. What else would you add, Rose, to how it came to be and where it's going?
Yeah, I mean, I think you pretty much covered it. We'd spent so many hours talking about these things just amongst ourselves and thought the conversations could be much deeper and more meaningful if we included other people who also had things to say about it. And I think we also just from that one live Samantha was referencing and other conversations we've had with people in the community, it was really clear that we're not the only ones that think about these things or have an interest in unpacking them. And we've seen that with the podcast, the way people are responding to it, both in, you know, folks who are fans of the genre, but also folks who work within the industry. There's been a lot of excitement around these conversations, and it's clear that it's on, the things we're talking about are on people's minds, and they're eager to learn and engage. So it's been really cool.
I love that.
Julie will have a link because she's awesome at that too. So people can find the podcast and listen to it and join it, you know, the future ones that you do. And I am a big advocate of, if you see something that needs to be done, do it. And I love that this kind of came from that idea, because that's kind of when we hosted Charm City Romanticon this year, that was kind of where that came from us sitting down and going, we want to do a con, we want to do a book thing that's what we want, like our perfect thing. And it's like, okay, so it doesn't exist. Let's just make it. let's just do it. And then it kind of grows from there. It becomes kind of organic. And I love the way your podcast has brought in so many elements, because people can say, oh, it's a narrator thing. But in the romance industry, there's nothing that's just a them thing. Mm-hmm. It's such an amazing community that it's a narrator thing and a producer thing and an author thing. And it just brings everybody in. And that's wonderful, because it builds more community.
Yeah.
And it has those discussions that I always told my students, ask a question, because chances are you're not the only one asking it.
Yeah.
But everybody else might be too afraid to ask it. So someone has to do it.
Yeah.
So thank you guys for doing that, because it's really beneficial for the community to know what's going on and have those discussions.
Oh, well, thank you for listening to it. Yeah. I mean, it's really, it's been really great. And I think it builds a certain degree of increasing the literacy, for lack of a better term, across the community. I think sometimes it's really easy to see certain conversations pop up, and I can sit there as somebody who's both a narrator and producer going, oh, I don't think they're really thinking about what's difficult about this for the other side. Mm-hmm. And so by having these conversations, transparently and in the open with various perspectives, it's really important to both Rose and I, as we think about who we invite to sit around the table, to get really different perspectives around the one idea. Because, it's an illusion to think that there's only one way about any of this stuff. And so that's really important. So thank you for being a part of the community of it.
Yeah. No, we love it.
I've only been in the community a short time. And I always tell people, I've only been here for, it's been 3 years, March of 2020. And I'd never read a romance book before then. And I have a degree in English. I have taught language arts for decades, and I was such a book snob. And then an author friend of mine who writes romance put one of her books in my hand, because she's like, you're spiraling out of control because you have nothing to do. And I was like, you're right. And I haven't read anything but romance since March 14th of 2020, and jumped into this community. And it's been amazing how welcoming it is, how open it is, how interested people are in learning new things about the community and teaching other people about the community. And I love that there's no one way to do anything. There isn't. Mm-hmm. And I love that you get those other perspectives. And part of why we do what we do is to get those other perspectives also, so people can hear multiple voices and say, oh, I never thought about that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was a thing. And it's like, well,
it's a thing. So
think about it. So, Julie, you had some questions. I know we're talking narration and all kinds of things, and we're just going to buzz through some questions and off the rails immediately, but let's get back on the rails, Julie.
Why and how did you become a narrator? What made you go that direction?
I'll let you go first, Rose. I feel like I dove in on the Rose more one.
Sure. Yeah, I'm a lifelong actor. Starting in theater. I worked in professional theaters my entire life, starting as a little kid. And I always was interested in voiceover. I think when I was a kid, I thought it would look like animation was really the only version of voiceover that I understood or knew. But as I became an adult in actor, I started to realize that audiobooks might be an interesting fit, because it's kind of like a little play where you get to play, or a really long play actually, where you get to play every single character. And as an actor, that really appealed to me. I did grow up to get into voiceover work, and so I was already doing that. But narration is obviously super long form, and most of what I was doing was short form narration. And so I started to think, but it was appealing to me. So I started to think about, well, what do I need to do to prepare myself to work in such a long form genre? And I won't bore you with all the various things that I did, but they included working on this news app where I started recording really long news articles at 4 a.m. and then going through a bunch of coaching and all of that. And until I felt like, yeah, I can do this. I can speak for a really long period of time. And I quickly learned, especially when I shifted to narration coaching specifically, that it really was as good of a fit as I hoped it would be, in terms of really relying on my acting skills. And I felt, and especially at the time, I lived in New York City and then abruptly moved out of the city. And now I live in the country, really, in Western Mass. And upon moving here, I was really missing theater and I was missing my community and opportunities. And I realized that when I leaned into the narration work I was just getting started in at the time, that that really seemed to fulfill that acting need in a way that was unexpected. It was in a bigger way than I ever imagined. And it sort of blossomed from there. It just really, yeah, it's just an acting gig that I love. Started to learn to love in a deeper way as I started to do more and more of it.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and similar to Rose, I come from a theater background. When I was studying, I had like a brief stint where I assisted blind grad students and would like record their research to tape. And that did not give me the audiobook bug because it intimidated the crap out of me, because they were, you know, researching very intense things and I had to figure out how to pronounce them, et cetera. And then I moved to the city and I mostly was working on theater stuff, but that doesn't pay so well. So I had a friend basically get me in to audition with Pandora Radio for their commercials, basically. And I didn't hear from them for like 9 months. And then all of a sudden heard from them. I needed to find a place to record these commercials that I was getting booked for. So I would slip into studios. Recorded Books had a studio at the time. And before, I had a friend who was directing books there. And so before her session would start, I'd like bring her a bagel and be like, I just need 5 minutes. And that became unsustainable. So then the studio that I work with now, Brickshop Audio, I could go into their studio, self-record my commercials before their days started, you know, left some cash on the board. And then they were like, well, you're already here. You want to audition for some books. And so that was how I started getting into audiobooks. And I was doing some cartoon work and some video game work primarily. So everything was much shorter form. So getting books through Brickshop was a really, like, a, to Rose's point, a very different muscle. And I was very worried about my own endurance because I am a tad distractible. But I found it actually is a really great counter, because there's a way, just the way in which books are written for the most part, you can really get lost in them. And if you've done your prep, like I could actually get into a flow that was very, really satisfying to me as an actor. And then I just started doing more and more audiobooks.
And I just love that. Can I add just one thing for, just in case you have listeners who are really curious about sort of the, I mean, we're telling our own personal stories of what drew us to this and sort of the first steps that got us into it. But it might be worth mentioning that there's lots of ways that people start to book work in this field. Mm. And it looks different for everybody. And for me, I happened to right out of the gate work with a coach who was connected to all of the publishing houses. So that was how I got my start. But I think nowadays a lot of, and you know, and Samantha described sort of being in a studio and getting building contacts that way and getting started that way. And the other thing that a lot of people do is they start on ACX, which is sort of like a free platform for authors to connect with producers and narrators if they want to turn their books into audio. So that's what a lot of people do who don't, just in case you're a listener and you don't have these types of connections right out of the gate, that's where a lot of people get their feet wet, where they start to build up their stamina and start to build contacts as well. But there are so many different paths to entering this world. It just seemed worth mentioning some of them.
Yeah. Well, and to be fair, as much work as I booked and opportunity as I got by being able to have face-to-face interactions with people in studios and make those connections in the city, once I started to decide that I wanted to do more audiobook work, I was like, cool, so where do I get the jobs? And it was definitely, I went the ACX route, and I actually I spent a lot of time in the early days as a producer at Brickshop, really understanding all aspects of production. So I directed a lot of books because of coming from a theater background, and engineered a lot of them. So I got to hear how a lot of actors worked, which is really invaluable. But then I also started recording my own books and editing them and doing all the post-production myself so I could learn the post-production, but also to build my resume so that if somebody went and looked, they'd see, oh, okay, she's done a number of books. And so ACX was really helpful for me in that way. So yeah, I would agree. It's a great place for people to start if they want. Mm-hmm. But as I understand it, it's a very different landscape now than it was pre, you know, 2020 even. So
sure. Yeah, I certainly can't speak to what it looks like now. But it's probably worth looking at if it's something that you're interested yeah. in learning about.
There's no wrong way to go. I mean, it's if there's an avenue out there and someone can explore it. And, you know, audiobooks are becoming huge. You know, they've always been out there, but I don't know. I just, in the last couple of years, I've just seen this explosion of audiobooks, not as, right. So my experience with audiobooks was always there's somebody reading the story. Mm-hmm. And my experience with audiobooks goes back to younger Spawn has dyslexia, and most of what they read through, we homeschooled, and most of what they read came through audiobooks. And it was literally someone reading a story, and I would go to sleep. and then somebody told me, Julie, that there was this audiobook I needed to listen to by a thread. And I was like, oh, wow, this is so different. I mean, it was like the story being acted, not just somebody reading a story. And now I'm completely addicted to audiobooks. I can't get in my car and go somewhere that's more than 5 minutes away without listening to an audiobook. Thankfully, the Spawns are old enough that they don't care. And my husband just rolls his eyes. But it's, I think the landscape has changed a lot. And for one, both of you talking about your acting background coming into play. And that's something that I hear, I think we all hear again and again, is that I'm an actor, because you're not reading a book. Mm-hmm. You're acting out someone's story. And it's just all verbal. Mm-hmm. And there's no visuals to it. But because yeah. the verbal is so well done, the visuals just kind of come alive, mm-hmm. because we're hearing that story being portrayed, not just read. So I love that both of you come from that acting background, because it makes a huge difference for me. And Julie will tell you, she's a total audiobook snob, and it has to match, you know, it has to bring something out that's going to make it interesting and want to listen to. And I'm not quite as big of an audiobook snob as Julie is, but no.
But sorry. I do think, you know, to your point, there's a lot of subtlety there as well. I think the narrator, Kelsey Navarro Foster, had this thing that she put on social a while ago where it was one sentence, but she read it for like five or six different genres. Mm-hmm. And just the way that she adjusted the take, like you felt like you were in a different type of audiobook. And I think that mm-hmm. really speaks to, like, one, why we should not be using AI, but two, like also how important that actor mindset into a book is, because there's and I think that this is true. I've discovered, at least, I don't know what you would say to this, Rose, but I find that books in general have a lot more to dig into and pull apart than sort of is on the surface. So mm-hmm. A lot of the other work, like, for example, like cartoons and video games, I get the script the day of, and it's pretty straightforward on what's going there. But some books that I've gotten, if I just cold read it, I would miss completely a lot of other things that are going on with the narrative and with the story and with the characters. Mm-hmm. And so it's really important to be able to spend that time and use those actor's script tools that you have to help bring them out.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. And I think the difference, and what's so fun for an actor in audiobook narration versus other types of work that we get to do, whether it's on stage or camera, whatever it is you get that when you're preparing a script for a play, a lot of time, it depends on your method. But for me, you know, I would map out motivation, what happened the moment before, filling in all of this information that you don't get in the script. And the beautiful thing about narrating a book is that you get so much of that. You get all the entire inner monologue that's happening for this person. You're given so much juicy information about the, depending on the way the book is written, but usually the main character, sometimes multiple characters in the book. And all of that gets incorporated into the way you portray the human and the way you get them to jump off of these pages. And yes, I totally agree that without looking for those little signals from the author, you would miss so much in mm-hmm. how you portray the story. And I think that mm-hmm. that speaks probably to what you're describing, Michelle, as having been a difference between now and sort of previous iterations of audiobook narration is what you're hearing as not just being read to is the performer taking in all of those details and processing them mm-hmm. and adding them to the dialogue, especially in the mm-hmm. way that Samantha was saying Kelsey did, where it's not just the words off the page, it's all of this background information showing up in one line of dialogue to the scene partner in that moment.
Absolutely. And it's so much more than the words on the page. You know, you have tone, you have inflection, you have cadence, you have all of these things that go into it, creating a mood, creating a pattern, helping the audience realize what this character is all about. Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. it is true. I mean, depending on how you read a sentence, and there's sometimes when I audio proof for a couple of authors, and sometimes I'm reading along and I'm like, oh, they missed a comma, because just that little thing changes something in the sentence and it changes the meaning or the way it sounds. And sometimes it's like, eh, it's fine. But sometimes it's like, okay, wait a minute. And I go back and listen, I'm listening. Yeah, no, that's good. But it's like something will trigger. And I'm like, okay, wait a minute. Something mm-hmm. changed there that changes the meaning of the sentence. Mm-hmm. And we were joking with, we had Rob Brinkman on last week, and we were joking with him about his daddy TikTok.
Yeah.
About how it could just that. It's just like one word, but depending on how mm-hmm. it's used and who's saying it, it can change the entire meaning and context. Mm-hmm. So you're right. That one sentence, changing inflection, changing the speech pattern can change everything about mm-hmm. what you're listening to, and then it changes the whole experience of what you're getting. Mm-hmm. So you guys bring characters to life, and there's a big difference between just hearing someone say something and understanding what that character's motivation is. And mm-hmm. we talk a lot about the voice matching the character. Mm-hmm. And I know I've listened to a lot of the books that you guys have done, and I know it's the same person. You're the same person. But when you read a different character, different things come out in different characters. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it work, because mm-hmm. you change how you approach it depending on what you know about the character. So I mm-hmm. love that background that you have, because it lets you bring in so many different things that mm-hmm. just somebody reading a book, you know,
it doesn't have the same effects.
Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of authors don't know, like, are on the fence sometimes about bringing their work into audio, or you know, it's just because these characters and these stories have lived in your head for so long mm-hmm. and to pass them off to somebody can be really intimidating. But I just did a book a few weeks ago, and I got maybe my favorite compliment from an author ever, which is that, I mean, she's an accomplished writer. She's done a lot of books. She was like, but listening to the audio and listening to your version of the audio brought out these other aspects. Like, I thought I was just kind of writing this like fun romp that had a couple tension moments, but the way in which you embodied that story, I got all these dimensions to a character that I didn't really even realize were necessarily on the page. And mm-hmm. like, she loved that story then even more. And that is like, whoa, huge compliment. Mm-hmm. But I think that to help yeah. some authors have that confidence to take the leap, you know, I would mm-hmm. say on the whole, audiobook narrators are very thoughtful, and we do feel in general like a certain responsibility to the work, and know that a lot of other people have been involved in this, and know that especially when you're working with indie authors, like, we know how big the investment is, how important this is for you. And not only am I grateful for the opportunity, but I feel it's my responsibility, you know, to bring my best work to that. And Rosa said this to me before when I talk about my schedule thing. She's like, why would you ever set yourself up to like not do your best work? And I think that mindset of, you know, ethically going forward with work is true of a lot of audiobook narrators. So put your work in audio is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I agree. There are books out there that are not in audio right now that I'm like, someday.
Yeah.
It's gotten bad. Okay, I'm going to kind of out myself in a little bit this. It's gotten bad to the point where there are a couple of authors that I edit for where as I'm reading, I'm editing for them, I'm reading it in certain narrators' voices. So I'm like already hearing, and I'll message. I do this with Carissa Graysick a lot. I'll message her. I'm like, someday when your books go into audio, this is who I'm hearing. And she's like, now I got to go listen to this person. And I'm like, just, you know, just putting it out there. I'm reading this in so-and-so's voice in my head and it fits. So, yeah, you guys do make an impression.
That. That's amazing.
I'm going to touch on that just a tad bit. I'm sorry. Now I've got a frog in my throat. But Janice Whitaker has just started doing audiobooks. And, you know, as we're trying to book narrators, it is crazy how far out we are booking. Like, she's got people booked for books that aren't even written at this point, because you have to book out so far if you want to get, you know, specific narrators. So do you have you noticed that? Are you getting booked out far?
Yes. I think we lost Samantha. I'm sure she'll be back on a second.
Yes.
Yes. I just had, that was happening to me a lot. I was booked out 6 months to a year in advance for a long time. And to what Samantha, some of what Samantha was referring to before about why would you not set yourself up, what I said about setting yourself up to do your best work. That came out of conversations about scheduling, exactly what you're talking about, because what's happening, because the rise in, I think because the rise in interest in audio, which, you know, we all love, and because there is such this, oh, there she's again. Hello.
Hi. I heard the frog in the throat and I had to leave. I'm so sorry for the
interruption. Because there's this love for narrators, and I think a lot of people are doing what you're doing, what you described, Michelle, of like writing to their author friends and saying, hey, I hear this voice. And we're so grateful for that, because sometimes that gets us hired on a particular project. But because those things are happening, for a lot of narrators, you are just getting offers for far in advance and getting booked up. And for me, that started to feel a little overwhelming. And so I'm in a self-imposed like slowdown for part of the summer, so that I can do my best work. Because for me, I think everybody probably functions differently in this way, so I'm only speaking for myself here. But if I get overbooked or I book too far out, I just can't show up the way I want to for each project. And so it's great to get all of this interest, but also I think it's really important to be really honest with yourself about, yes, maybe you can fit it in, but, or at least, again, this is just how I feel about it. Yes, maybe I can fit it in, but will I really do that book service, the mm-hmm. service that it's due, if I put it in this slot? And that can be really hard, because, you know, we feel the love and we're so appreciative of it. And we know authors want to get narrators locked down because they don't want to miss out. So it's a really hard thing to navigate. It's really tough for everybody involved, I think.
Well, and I think stress, there is a level of stress that comes with overwhelm. Mm-hmm. And stress tends to run you down. And stress tends to, it looked like she froze, so I'm hoping. Mm-hmm. Oh. But, you know, stress tends to be one of those factors that really can create exhaustion and overwhelm, and then you're not at your best because you're so worried about what everything else is doing mm-hmm. that you can't focus. Mm-hmm. And I love that you said you kind of look at it as, I can't do my best work if I'm worrying about, stressing out, overwhelm, when I can do it. I get the same way. Mm-hmm. Thank God for Julie and Ron and Susie, because they have talked me off many a ledge before I learned to say no. Or before I learned to say not right now, because I do that mm-hmm. a lot too. But when you're using your voice, which is such a sensitive instrument, and life can be temperamental, and you have mm-hmm. to figure out just how much can I take on. I think the industry can be at the point where the industry can continue to tell you, you gotta do more, you gotta do more, you gotta do more. And right. if you turn something down now, you may not get something later. At some point you have to say, you know what, that's okay.
Yeah.
Because I know my value and I know my worth, and I know that I'll get more jobs, mm-hmm. but I'm not going to get any work if I can't do any work. So.
Yeah, well, and being any type of gig worker, it's a scary thing to say no to a project, because there is this scarcity mindset. It's like always going to be in the back of your mind that if I say no to this, there isn't a guarantee. Like the mm-hmm. truth of it is, there isn't a guarantee that work will be there in the future, but you're absolutely right. If you can get yourself to a place where you feel, look, I've spent all this time building these strong contacts, I know I show up as my doing my best each time. So I know they can rely on me. Mm-hmm. Then sometimes you just have to take that leap of faith that it mm-hmm. will be there. And that's kind of what it means to be a gig worker. And it's not for everybody, right? It's not, mm-hmm. some people just need that extra bit of security you get from like a standard 9-to-5 job. And I totally get that. Mm-hmm. I think for those of us that are come into this because we're actors, usually the case is that we've kind of prepared ourselves for a life of uncertainty, right? And like, and knowing what it takes to build out like the financial securities that we need, the steps we need to take to make sure that safety net is there when we need it. But also, I think we all are taking a little bit of a leap of faith in feeling confident in what we've built, and that our clients will keep coming back to us, even if we have to say no to them for right now.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I love that you guys have a network too, so that you can rely on each other. You have people who you can bounce things off of. You know, that it is hard to be a gig worker. You feel like if you turn something down, someone else is going to pick it up. And then I experience the same things as an editor. If I say no to this author, they're going to find someone else. And what if they like them better than me? And then they don't come back. Mm-hmm. And you know what? That's a real possibility. But I could do crappy work for someone and get the same result, where they're going to be like, well,
yeah,
that sucked, I'm going to go get someone else, because I couldn't do my best work because I was so stressed over doing all the things. That if you try to do all the things, you do none of the things well.
I'm the odd one out here between the three of us, is that I was not an audiobook fan. Audiobooks for me were isolated to educational materials, and the best of that being Brené Brown, and the worst of it being Gary Zukav, who, if you've ever listened to him, sounds like you're absolutely the most boring professor you've ever heard. So when they say, when the girls are like, well, have you done the audiobook for this book or this book? And I'm like, I can't even imagine Gary Zukav in this doing this. So like, that's not happening. But I'm a convert because of my sisters here. So how do you...
You're welcome.
How do you choose a project? I mean, now that you've said that you're trying to manage your schedules better, how do you choose which projects you say yes to and which ones you turn down?
Yeah. So for me, I have not, like, I'm not quite at the place in my career where I'm super choosy in terms of like how booked up my calendar is. This year has been a very successful year for me, but it has afforded me the opportunity to think about, okay, if projects did come in, what gets to take your time? What do you want to focus on? And I learned for myself, because I work in various genres, I'd say romance is about 50% of the work that I do, and other voiceover opportunities, I kind of zoomed out and wanted to make sure that I was leaving pockets for the other types of work that I wanted to do to balance it out. Because I realized the thing about me and my brain is that whether or not I'm doing 5 fantasy books in a row or 5 nonfictions or like 5 billionaire romances, like my skills start to wane. It's hard to keep it fresh. It's hard to stay connected just because of the way my distractible brain works. So I'll pick projects based on how they kind of work in that recipe for me throughout the year. There are certain authors and like publishers or producers that are on like a list of would be great to work with, and I'd like the opportunity. And a couple of them happened recently where I was like, well, I'll make the time because these projects are pretty great, but if I could be better about saving the time for them, that'd be good. But yeah, it's usually about the people and a little bit less about the content, and then sometimes about the genre, to make sure that I'm, for myself, keeping my calendar kind of balanced.
It's similarly for me. For me, it's all just an acting gig, right? So the genre doesn't change the work that I'm doing in terms of like how I show up in it. But I also, it is helpful to have a variety. For me, like I said at the start of this, I primarily narrate romance these days, though I'm very interested in other genres as well, and I do record in other genres. It just seems that romance is what comes my way the most. And that is fine with me. I do like to have within that a variety of subgenres, because for all the reasons Samantha said, it just like it keeps me doing my best if I have a little bit of a variety in that way. Tapping into different the emotional content is different. And so if you're doing, like, I do a lot of dark romance, and recently I had just a back-to-back-to-back-to-back of dark romances. And I realized for the first time, that's not actually great for me, because for a lot of reasons, but it's a lot to live in that headspace for so long. And I came to learn, well, I can't actually do my best work, no matter how hard I try, if I am exclusively living in this emotional space. So I could do romance all day long, but I do need a little bit more of a variety within that genre. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes if it's a no for me, it might be because of that, or I just ask, can I move this to this time so that I can space things out and get and build in that variety a little bit. I'm not really in a place to just pass on work just for the sake of passing. I mean, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to say no. But if I have my own personal reasons for my own schedule, for my own like mental health and rest, that would be why I would be a little more choosy. And then certainly I have, because I do a lot of dark romance in particular, I have sort of a list of that I've learned over time out of experience, things that just aren't comfortable for me in a way that I can show up and do my best. And so if I'm being offered anything that's labeled as dark romance, there's a series of questions that I'm always sure to ask the producer just to make sure that I'm not getting myself into something that's going to feel unsustainable once I get started. Mm-hmm. And that is really the only time in terms of content where I'll be like, nope, can't do this one. Thank you, but no thank you. Otherwise, yeah, it all just feels like an acting gig and I get to play in all these different ways, and that's fun.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you typically work on one project at a time, or do you I know Michelle edits multiple books at the same time, and I write multiple books at the same time. Do you work on different voice projects at the same time?
My preference is to go one at a time. I like to prep and go straight into recording, and it's hard. I know some people prep while recording another book, like at night they'll be prepping and during the day they'll be recording. And I do that when it's out of necessity sometimes, but that's definitely not my preference, because I like to live in the world of a book while I'm in it and focus on that. It just works best for me. But yes, every once in a while, it is what it is, and you have to do more than one at a time. Or there's I would say for me, the thing that's come up most frequently that has me end up doing multiple things at once is there's a slowdown in production. That was nobody expected. Like, I need an answer to a question before I can move forward on a project. And it's just there's a waiting period to get that response. Mm-hmm. So then I might start working on the next project just so my schedule doesn't get too behind. But for me, generally, I like to go one project at a time.
Yeah. Rose is saying I'm a monster. I agree that for the recording, I've had a couple instances where I'd like started a book and then was again similarly held up, something came up, some sort of communication, and then tried to start another one and think, oh, the next one's a nonfiction, it's not going to throw me off that bad, and tried to jump in and would totally. It was really hard to get pulled from a book. Mm. So when recording, it's really important for me to have all my sessions be consecutive for the same thing, with the exception that some of the other shorter form work I do, like I can do a car commercial before I record a romance. That's fine. But I do actually stagger my prep. So I will be in two slightly different worlds. But that's because I found also lately the script delivery, I mean, I think this is indicative of some of the stuff that we were talking about earlier with people getting booked so far out. Then what happens is that oftentimes Rose and I are just having this conversation on a project we're working on together where the script just isn't ready. And you've had this hold for 9 months and now you're there at the hold and the editing's taking longer. Yeah. There's this other snafu. So now you're here and that window has to leave where you have to start doing things like I'm prepping three books at once. And that's not great, because I think the prep to a certain extent and the connection between the prep and performance, mm-hmm. that connection gets a little bit weaker when it's not mm-hmm. done. But I do like bit bopping around because I'm just a monster like that.
I don't think you're a monster. Brain.
No, you're not. It's brain squirrels.
Yeah.
They kind of take over sometimes and they hop from tree to tree. And, you know, that's just the... This is the way they work. They laugh at me all the time because they're like, what are you working on? And I'm like, well, I'm working on a romantic suspense, a contemporary, and a rom-com. I'm like, that's one book. No.
Keep it fresh. You know, work at the buffet.
No, it's an edit. It's a proofread. It's an arc. Or it's two edits and a proofread. Whatever it is. But my brain has to switch because otherwise I get I get word blind where if I read something that's the same for too long, I'm like, okay, I start to just kind of, not because the book is boring at all, it's because my brain is like just traveling. So I get that. But there's also an element, sometimes I get so into a book that I'm working on that I'm like, I can't stop. I just got to keep going on this. And some authors send me a little bit at a time and I get to the end of what they've sent me and I'm like, no, you can't leave me there. Mm-hmm. What's next? Then I have to wait. And I won't do anything else because I want to wait for that. Because I want the rest of the story. But anyway, squirrel. Okay. So I understand the concept of what you're saying, where it's like, no, I have to be in the moment. I have to stay with it. Or sometimes it's like, well, I can adjust. I can jump because I'm waiting. And that's an element, I think, that us as readers, we don't think about the production element of how long it takes to record, problems that can come up in the middle of recording, mm-hmm. things that come up personally, you know, mm-hmm. that you're like, okay, everything has to be kind of pushed to the side. Readers are clamoring for audiobooks. Mm-hmm. And I see this a lot in groups where they'll ask an author, well, when's the audiobook coming out? And the author's like, soon. You know, the narrators are not machines. Mm-hmm. We're working on it. They're booked. We're getting there soon. Just chill, because you're going to get a great audiobook when you get it, because the narrators are doing what they need to do and they're going to do an awesome job. So we wait.
Well, it's wild to think how much time is spent on the back end. Like, I think the various steps, right? The actors and post-production folks, all your editors, all your proofers, they're taking hours of work to get it to there. But then that author has spent, you know, months, if not years, pulling together these stories. And then, you know, you have such a voracious, which I'm so thankful for, but just this voracious, like, fandom that's like, gobbled it up in a night. Some books will come out and somebody's like, I spent my whole day listening to that book. And I'm like, whoa, I spent so much. And, you know, a lot of times people will go back and re-listen, which is wonderful. But yeah, it's crazy how quickly it's consumed on the one end and how much work goes in.
Goes on the back end. Front.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, on the front end for it. It's crazy.
Ron, you've got to ask that one question.
Oh, yeah.
I am.
That is like, I cannot wait to hear the answer.
So you said that you do prep work and that you know, you pre-read to know what the story is so that you know what your characters are like. I was listening to one of Rose's audio demos on her site, the audio sample, and it happened to be an explicit one. And what came to mind was, I wonder how many takes it took her to say that in a voice that sounded like a straight face, because I'm like, how many times would it take me to say the word dong in that context?
I was wondering which one you were talking about. Oh yeah, that was
and I thought, you know, so I work for Avery Maxwell and her books are pretty steamy. I'm an author and I write pretty steamy work. And there are times when I'm writing and I stop and I think, I can never have this narrated because nobody will ever be able to say that with a straight face. So how do you handle outtakes and the inevitable, did she really write that?
So for me, early on, there were more stumbles, but very quickly, I think if you're in the story and if you're in the voice, like, it does, because it needs to feel natural, right? It needs to mm-hmm. feel like it's coming from this place. So I have then tricked myself and been in that moment and be like, no, man, this is her truth. This is this moment's truth. This is the action scene of the book. Like, mm-hmm. so let's give it that momentum that it needs. So I found myself less self-conscious. Like my monitor doesn't go on to say like, oh, I can't believe that came out of my mouth. Cause I do feel like to do my best work, I have to be really present. Mm-hmm. And I also think that I have an advantage of spending a significant amount of time doing work where like I have a director just telling me that I'm like not grunting right for a cartoon, and like that's way more embarrassing to be like than like saying explicit things, you know, in any of these steamy scenes, because I also think that's part of what we're kind of promoting is being comfortable and confident mm-hmm. about wanting to express
our sexuality.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so if I can be the example for you in making these scenes feel natural, then, you know, I feel like that's kind of my responsibility. But I don't know for you, Rose, if you struggled.
No, I think it. It's similar for me. I feel like this isn't the, I feel like it'd be way better if I could give you some fun answer about like how much I'm like cracking up or whatever I'm doing, but I'm really, it's similar to what Samantha described, I'm really not. Yes, there's definitely an adjustment when you start, or for me, there definitely was an adjustment to kind of, just get fully invested in what I'm saying. But yeah, pretty quickly you realize this is an acting gig. I am portraying these people. And so it's not me saying these words. Mm-hmm. It's the character, and it's true to that character. And it does feel natural for them. And yes, the prep and pre-reading, I think, helps, because then you go in knowing what to expect also. And so it's not like all of a sudden you're surprised in the booth that here are these like words that I wouldn't use in my daily conversation, but this character does, or whatever it is. You've already been made aware of that and understand how it fits into that character's personality or train of thought or whatever it is. Yeah. So yeah, it. I don't know.
The story pulls you through.
Yeah, for sure. Especially when the writing is really clear. Especially like if you're talking about like really steamy scenes, if they, mm-hmm. for me, if they really push the story forward, mm-hmm. then it feels super natural, because you're just right there with the characters and it's like a little movie in your mind. So yes, you're saying the words. I mean, this is sort of a side note, but you know, the way people who don't consume romance talk about romance in this really ill-informed way, they forget that they watch movies that do exactly what these books do. It's just no one is sitting there describing what they're seeing, right? They're just mm-hmm. seeing it. And mm-hmm. so that's the difference. And when you're recording it, I just get to this place of I am creating the illustration. I'm creating the scene that you would see on screen if it were a movie, but mm-hmm. I'm just saying the descriptive words that instead of watching it, you're hearing it. And so it just feels very natural in that way for me.
Yeah, I think people forget that there's screenplays behind movies. You know, somebody actually wrote that to begin with.
Yeah, that's a great point. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
So, great.
No, I'm glad you brought that up about this. You know, people who bash romance novels have this misconception of it's, you know, gosh, we've got mommy porn and just, you know, some of the language that's used to describe it. And it's like, you know, these are pretty emotionally intense. When you read a really good romance novel, the sex that's in it moves the story along, because it's about the connection between the characters. Right. It's the emotional intensity that's coming out in their relationship. Mm-hmm. And as a former book snob, who was raised to believe that only the classics were to be read, and now moving into a more enlightened point in my life, it only took 50 years, but there is an element of connection and relationships that you see in romance novels that you don't see in anything else. And seeing people comfortable writing it and then seeing people comfortable reading it, I think says a lot about how far we've come in language, how far we've come in literature, how far we've come as just people who can sit there and openly read a sex scene next to each other, or to each other, or listen to someone else read it, and think about the emotional connection between the characters. Mm-hmm. to me, that says so much about the genre itself and how much it's grown, because it's about relationships. And that's...
And the controversial thing I feel like I will say related to this is that even if you are invested in some of the more like erotic fiction that, you know, I've certainly narrated, I think there's also something really wonderful to be a part of a community that's like, and quite frankly, yeah, the characters are there, but this is really about exploring this kink in a thoughtful way, or not a kink, just this, you know. And I think that content is absolutely like, is a positive thing to, there's negative ways to engage with any content. And I think that some people can get consumed in any hobby or interest, but I think that in general, that there's not shame for wanting to explore and just like it because like, yeah, it was really hot and it woke something up in me or made me think something else. Like that's a great reason to engage in any content.
Mm-hmm. 100% agree. It's
owning it, declaring it as part of what you love, who you are, exploring.
No shame.
There is power in ownership. Yep. Mm-hmm. And that's right. It gets rid of that shame. Shame keeps a lot of people down from doing things that they would do, people that they might meet. So I love that we can use romance and erotica as a way to say, nope, I'm collecting my power and I'm holding on to it and I am proclaiming who I am. And you can go, if you don't want to be a part of it, that's on you. That's a you problem, not a me problem, if this isn't your thing.
Well, and because I am fairly new to being an audio listener, audiobook listener, I think that it was really powerful for me to engage with books, because I only listen to books I've actually read. So so it was really great for me to be able to hear the especially explicit scenes were done in a way that was elevating. You know, it didn't go for the dad joke barroom level engagement of it, that the narrators elevate those scenes in a way that I wasn't expecting.
Right. There was a level of respect and seriousness to it that was yeah.
Right. Right. And I think that's great. I mean I'm totally a fan now. I need more hours in my day, more ears.
Well,
more
and eyes. Frankly, I think Rose is in line with this perspective as well. Like, we spend so many hours doing this work. I don't want to do a job that I go in there. I'm like, well, we're here now in this scene, so let me just collect my paycheck. And then he said this to her, and then he put his arms around me. Like, that's not a job I want to show up to. So the work is better if I feel better when I show up and I bring that to anything I do. Even if there are things that I'm personally challenged by, it's really important for me to be like, well, I need to like put in my mind the woman or the man or, you know, whoever is listening to this on the other end that's really going to get something from this and that this is really their thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, and how empowering to other women. I mean, guys too, but it's because we are a panel of women. How empowering is it for women who are not motivated or not supported in owning their own sexuality in their own lives,
which is to be able to hear, of women, I would say,
exactly.
Yep. Yes.
To hear women read the material in a way that is not dirty and not smutty and not I mean, not that those aren't valid things, but that erotica and erotic material can be portrayed in a way that is classy
And taken seriously,
and just being respected, that the material is being respected.
Exactly. And I think that's hugely empowering. So kudos.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll just speak for myself, like on a personal level. I've been narrating romance for, I don't know, 8 years, maybe specifically romance. And it changed a lot for me. And like the way that I think about all of this and like my own shame and my own discomfort and all of that, just like it has stepping out into the world to say, this is what I do for a living and here's why and here's my relationship to it and here's how I feel about it, changed a lot for me. And also just reading about these women who are in a lot of it for me, what happened was the real shift for me was one of my earliest romances was the Helena Hunting's Pucked series. And the character Lily that I was portraying in the first couple of books that I did in that series was so comfortable in her own sexuality and like talking to her friend group really openly about sex and like no shame. No one experienced shame in this book at all. Mm-hmm. And I'd never seen it. I mean, I know this isn't the case for everyone, but for me, I had no examples of that in my own life ever. And it was really eye-opening, like, oh, I get it. I get what these books can do, what they can provide for people. And I felt really honored to be tasked with, you know, getting to bring that kind of story to life and portray, even if it's not my, if that wasn't my reality at the time, like books are fantasy, right? And to have the fantasy be something that is so empowering in that way was really meaningful to me. And it's why I stuck with the genre, you know, it's why I was like, yeah, this makes sense. I can do this and I want to do this.
There's a whole podcast we could do on this. With
clearly found the button that will get Rose and I was already ready with mine. Like, and yes, and I was like, no, we've got time. Let's step away.
No, I was raised in a very conservative home where sex was just not talked about. Mm-hmm. And I felt, or I still feel, like romance really opened up my eyes to things. I should, you know, and I have vowed to, you know, my husband, I told him, I'm like, our daughter will know more than I did when I left high school. Mm-hmm. Yep. I mean, because I felt not prepared.
Yeah. Exactly.
And so. I've written my entire life and I'm 2 years shy of 60 and I'm just publishing my first works. So because my mother and my sister say, oh, you write smut, you know? So being able to surround myself with women who are elevating the genre beyond that belief, even in spite of the huge quantity of people who still hold that belief, it is a joy to me every single day.
Yeah.
Well, and I talk about this a lot. I think, thank you. Please, thank you for sharing that too. That's so, those perspectives are so incredible to hear and like digest. And so thank you for sharing that. And I talk a lot about this. I think fandoms of all nature taken out of context really are easily bullied, right? We were just talking about children playing tabletop RPGs and that in some context being called a dungeon master has a very different meaning than in another one. And you can sit there and you can say, oh, these nerds play and pretend wearing weird costumes. And it's completely getting away of all the nuance of community building, making it safe to be vulnerable and tell stories and trust each other around a table. And the same is true for romance that, yeah, you can take that one line out of a book and that one TikTok that somebody made as a part of that community and judge an entire fandom on that. Okay. And it's going to be very misinformed. But actually, once you really do get involved and start meeting the authors, reading more of the books and ingesting the content, you realize that there is all this other stuff going on.
Yep.
And meeting other people in the community. For me, the big thing has been meeting people in the community that are from all over the world, never mind the state or the country, who we all have this vested interest in this genre. And we all come from very different backgrounds, but we all come together over this one thing and finding somebody who was like, oh yeah, I was shamed for years because this, we never talked about this at home. I went to college not understanding how things worked because we never talked about things. And then finding a community that's going to say, you know, come on in, doors open, ask whatever you want, read all the things, say what's on your mind, let's talk about it. It's huge. When I came out as brazen and said, you know, I'm reading romance, which was like a year after I started reading it, my mother and my sister messaged me and they were like, well, it's about damn time, because apparently they have both been reading romance since my sister was in high school. So I'm like, really? Really? They're like, well, you were always such a book snob and we didn't want to be judged. And I was like, damn.
You were called out.
So totally called out.
My mom and my sister both have read romance since the beginning of time. I started reading romance at 13 years old because my mother, that's what was on my mom's shelf. But there was a clear line in her mind between what she would read and it was okay for other people to write and what it was all right for her daughter to write.
Mm.
And that, for me, created this huge disconnect because literally we were voracious readers who would read two or three books a day during the summertime. In all romance, bodice ripper romances. Yeah. And all of a sudden that was something that was not okay for me to then produce. So it's kind of crazy how judgy the communities can be.
I feel another podcast coming on.
just to give past Michelle some grace and your mother some grace, I think we're all a product of the world that we live in, right? So like we all receive these messages and we base our internalized shame or our deep rooted feelings off of what we've learned. And so, I'm just honestly, I think the pandemic has changed a lot of the way this genre is talked about and consumed. I think people like Colleen Hoover and names that have kind of crossed into a more mainstream, less genre specific community mm-hmm. space have really changed the game a lot, and that rhetoric is changing, and I'm really grateful for that. But it's understandable, I think, that people have come up in this world feeling the way they do about it, because you can't know what you don't know, right? Mm-hmm. So like if you've never experienced it and the only thing you're hearing is this is something to be ashamed of, or this isn't real literature, or whatever the thing is you're hearing, how can you know otherwise? And so I just want to give some grace to that a little bit.
Yep, absolutely. I have owned it. I have learned at this point. I'm like, yep, I understand why it happened. I understand how it happened. And I'm just so glad it only took me 50 years to figure out that it was all bullshit.
How beautiful that you got there.
Yeah, I got absolutely. There. Yeah.
We had spoke with Rob Brinkman last week, and we asked him, what's your favorite genre to narrate? And he's like, oh, 100% romance. And he's like, I would never have thought that. But here I am. He's like, I didn't realize what actually romance was, what a romance book mm-hmm. actually entailed, and how much you can, feel and learn and all mm-hmm. that. And I'm like, you get it. We were so happy.
And it's the community, it's being able to establish this community where you can be open about what you read and what you talk about and the emotions that come with it. And I know, we're running up on time, but okay, I've got a couple really quick questions because we could do, and we can come back and do an entire
a part two.
Love that. That would be amazing to do that about how it's changed and how women are seen and how romance is seen, because it's a passion of mine at this point to break that stigma and stereotype and get people past it, because it was life-changing for me, to be quite honest. Mm-hmm. And think about that community, because it is a big part of the community. You guys have been doing a lot of signings lately. And I first met both of you. I think we all first met both of you at Indies Invade Philly. And that's really where, this sounds weird. That's where narrators kind of became real to me, because before then you were a voice mm-hmm. in my ear. Yeah. And being able to see your faces and hugs and get things signed and put voices and faces and names made it expanded the community for me. So signings have been incredible for the authors, but for me, it's been an incredible experience meeting narrators, because it's really broadened that scope of the community for me. You guys have been doing a lot of them. What's that like? How does that impact what you do going to some of these events?
Yeah. Do you want to? Okay. So I can say that I didn't go to, the convention's really changed, I think, over the past few years, most certainly. And I think narrators are still this thing that many organizers don't quite know what to do with us, because we work with a lot of the authors there, but, our books aren't there. We don't, you're not like listening to samples of us. So it's been a very different experience. On the one hand, one of the craziest, most wonderful things is being able to meet some of the authors that I've worked for in person mm-hmm. and go, oh my gosh, I've narrated 10 of your books. Hi, you're a person, like similar to you, mm-hmm. of going, oh, okay, now I've made this connection. Meeting people in real life that have spent hours with me in their ears and have then thought to either bring something for me to sign or have a conversation or even want a picture is still very mind-blowing to me. It's very, like, it's so wonderful. And I'm that jerk that will often sit at the table and be like, so what'd you have for breakfast this morning? And how does that make you feel about your mom? Because I just feel so, you know, this need to connect to every person who's been there. I've also been to a couple that they didn't really have as much of an audio. So I've been to some where the lines have been really crazy and has been a very unique experience. And I've been to some where that table has been dead all day and people mm-hmm. will come by and be like, what do you do? I was like, oh, I'm an audiobook narrator. What's that? Who do you, what? And mm-hmm. I'm like, well, that's cool. Like, talk about it. Audiobooks aren't for a lot of people, but like, you know, and that too gives me a different opportunity to meet other people in the community, maybe turn them on to things, but then also frees me up to go meet new authors and have a different kind of experience at a convention that mm-hmm. I don't normally get just being in my box. So I think there's value for both of them, but I would like to see more opportunities for either conversations like panels or whatnot, or even having stuff set aside, like, if there's an author that you're really well known for being with or a series, like if part of that day you get to sit at their table so that fans can come through and you can meet them too, that would be a nice experience. But I think we're still figuring out, and I think it's really valuable. And I love nothing more than meeting people who like listen to our books face to face.
Echo all of that. All of it. And I would just add, my first convention was in 2021. It was Indies Invade Philly 2021, which was the first time they brought narrators there specifically. And it was amongst the first conventions that officially brought narrators at all, as far as I can tell. I think Love in Vegas had previously had some narrators, but the presence was just very different. Like, this was, we're decidedly bringing in a group of narrators. We're going to put them in a spot together. We're going to advertise that they are narrators. You know, it was like a whole thing. I hadn't heard of anything like that before. And I think some narrators had gone kind of individually to conventions as well with authors that they'd worked with a lot. But this was like very mindful about bringing the narrators there. And really, for me, and I don't know, I think some of this was just the energy of coming out of quarantine, but also, and also that a lot of readers had made these friends via the internet and built these connections at a time where we all needed connection. And this was their first time to meet each other in person. I really don't even have words to describe the feeling of watching that unfold in real time. Mm-hmm. Seeing people connect with one another in this, I'm like gonna cry. I mean, I'm getting teary just talking about it.
Yep.
It's so,
we get it.
It was one of the most special things I've ever been able to witness, of just watching these friends come together in this way. And then the fact that they came together around this table of narrators, like these listening to our voices, is what brought them together. It's just astounding. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I need a second. And that's, I've carried that feeling with me to every subsequent convention I've gone to. They've all been a little bit different. And I think just the timing of that one in particular made it mm-hmm. as special as it was. But I've seen this at everyone that I've gone to, whether it's one that you know, is heavily attended by audiobook folks or not, there's still this like getting to witness the community, the meaningful aspect of gathering around this shared love of books, and particular in this particular genre, and it is so special. On the practical side of things, yes to what Samantha said, I think conventions are really figuring out what to do with us, and I totally get that. It's like, you can't start something brand new and know exactly how to do it right out of the gate.
No.
The thing that for me, I wonder about, and I know, because I've spoken to some folks about it, I know people are starting to think about this, is authors come to conventions and they sell books. And whether they're selling them on site or they're selling them after the fact, they make mm-hmm. some amount of money by being there. They have a product to sell. For the most part, narrators don't have that. Mm-hmm. And we don't get paid to go. So
no,
it's out of Yeah. So it's out of pocket for us. And we don't actually, you know, I've often booked work because I've attended a convention in various ways. And I'm really grateful for that. And so in the long run, I get that out of it. But I would love to engage in conversations around like what else can we be doing for narrators to show up and gain not just this wonderful feeling that we get from being there and not just the connections we're getting with the other narrators and at its best with the other authors as well. But is there like a monetary thing that we can be doing, or can we be sponsored or something like that? I think the shift for me will be when convention organizers are thinking about that balance, right? Mm-hmm. Of like, okay, we know what the authors get out of this. What do the narrators get out of it? And if they're not getting these specific things out of it, how can we compensate for that in some way? So that's where it lives for me currently. It's like, I have a question around that.
We created a event. Yeah. And it was the event that we wanted for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And this really is the conversation that we have been having, is we would love for narrators to come in, and we really think that our community, because our convention is different than the bigger ones. We're very small. It's intimate. It's multiple days. We build a community. We create a vessel and we build a community, and people get to know each other and create super fans and real connections. I know that we're cut short on time today, but I would certainly invite you to be part of our conversation on how to make that happen in a way that is equitable for narrators and as it is for readers and for authors who are looking for narrators. Mm-hmm. So please be part of our conversation on that.
Please.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
yes.
I would love to.
Love that.
Yes.
You know, awesome. But it's funny that you mentioned this. I'll go back to what Samantha was saying, how, you know, these readers, they meet and they've never met in real, you know, in real life. And then mm-hmm. you, they're just in love or whatever. Well, Michelle and I, that's how we met.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, then Ron, and before you know it, there's four of us and we're planning a convention. You know, we met for the first time when we met you guys at
Indies.
Was it the year before? Was it the year before?
It was the first Indies in Philly since the pandemic. And we all went, and we had only talked to each other, you know, in the groups and stuff online. And I was terrified. I made my sister go with me because I had no idea what to do. And I'm kind of introverted in social settings, and I'm awkward. And I made her go with me because I was afraid I was going to miss my train and not know how to find the convention center. And met friends there that I had met online and I had never imagined I would meet in person and have become best friends. And the other thing that Indies Invade Philly 2021 did for me with the narrators is, if I knew in 2021 what I knew in 2022, mm-hmm. I would have done it very differently. Like, I went through the narrator line going, oh yeah, I think I've seen your book. Like, I went online and I bought a whole bunch of books based on the narrators that were going to be there. And then I read them and then I got them signed. But I had like no idea who I was meeting. I hadn't actually listened to the books yet. I had read them and I knew that those were the narrators. So I bought them to get them signed, and then I listened to them later because I only have so many hours in the day.
Of course.
And when I came back to Philly last year, 2022, it was a whole different experience for me. Mm-hmm. We did the blogger thing, so we were there an hour early. Julie and I went through the line twice for the narrators because it was so different. It was so much fun to connect with people whose voices had been in my head, who had voiced some of my favorite mm-hmm. characters. I am an unabashed fangirl, hype girl. It's what I love to do. And just meeting my book idols, like, you know, mm-hmm. oh, you voiced this character and I love this character. And this is, and I was, so when we were talking about the event and, you know, we want to have narrators, it's, I want other people to experience the same high that I did meeting the narrators who I mm-hmm. adore. And, you know, you guys are stars for us. So going through that line and getting you guys signing books, then I was like, I think Julie was gonna have to pick me up off the floor at one point. So she knows. So I and I was like, no, I'm okay. I'm not gonna cry again. But I want other people who come to these events to have that same experience and to leave knowing, you know, who the narrators are, why you do what you do, the intensity of what goes into the performances that you put into these books, because it made a huge difference for me when I listen to an audiobook now, knowing what goes into it. And there's an emotional attachment to certain characters.
Yeah.
And when the narrator is so perfectly that character springs from the page. It is so much more in depth. It's such a different experience. And then meeting someone like that was kind of like, for me, I was like, okay, I am in total fangirl mode. I hope I didn't say anything really stupid. I'm sure I did, because it's me. And
don't worry, I got you beat at those tables. Rose had to sit next to me at one. I inevitably say something way more dumb than anyone else could. So you're fine.
No.
Let your mouth run.
But okay. What's hilarious is while we're sitting here talking, I'm hearing Diana from No Going Back, the book behind Michelle. And Rose, I think I messaged you or in a comment or something. I work for both these authors. Spot
I thought I saw that book back
with
there.
Addie. With you were the perfect Addie.
Thank you. I really enjoyed narrating that book. That was that was a really beautiful one.
These books.
So, anyway, we're
so far over time. Okay, do I ask the loaded question?
Ask the loaded question.
I'm gonna ask the loaded question. Might as well, right? Okay. So there is a lot of chat in a lot of the groups right now about the attention that the male narrators get over female narrators. And for me, this is a hot button topic because I am all about promoting people. And I do believe that male narrators get different and more press than female narrators get. How do we change that? How do we level the playing field?
I mean, if I had the answer, we'd be in a different era. Also, how much time do you have? Because I feel like this is a subject that Rose and I could maybe spend more than a few minutes on.
Yeah.
Podcast so not part just three. Me.
Okay. Podcast part three.
I have a very quick sort of patent perspective on this, which is that I understand why in a community that has a large female heteronormative fan base that has content that titillates, that you're going to form a different kind of emotional response to somebody who is narrating those scenes. And I think in general, a lot of women are not necessarily, they treat the female characters as their best friend and judge them a little bit more and think of the female characters a little bit different rather than putting themselves in the shoes of the female characters. Like, action movies are made because men want to be the action hero. And but I don't necessarily think that a lot of romance books are written with women wanting to step into those female characters. It's a lot of empathizing, sympathizing, sometimes stepping into them, but they're still having that relationship to that male character and that male voice. So it makes sense to me why, if you have a stronger feeling tied to that voice, that you're going to be more compelled to go out in the world. So I don't begrudge anybody for having that response to the male narrators. And many male narrators are incredibly hardworking and amazing and considerate. Many could work better behind the scenes. I think that's where it gets frustrating, is that you see a kind of disconnect behind the scenes. And then when you see people getting really, you know, talked about and celebrated, you know, that equity is, that's for me where the equity gets a little bit frustrating. But more and more, I am seeing people I think that we have more, I'll speak for myself, I have more meaningful connections, I think, with readers and people in the community than I think a lot of male narrators do. And if I had to pick, like, the mass attention or the meaningful connections, I would still go for the meaningful connection. But I think it does, I think there's a lot of internalized issues that some women have and are bringing to this. And authors will tell us often that they hear more complaints about the female characters, even when the male characters are toxic as all hell. And nobody will say anything wrong about them. So I think it's a very deep issue that's connected to a lot of different things. And I can just say, I'm appreciative of people like yourself who were just calling out more and more and saying, well, this book was enjoyable because 70% of the book was narrated by this woman. And she brought that story to life for me in a really positive way. Sorry, I'm packing up my soapbox, Rose. You can go.
I mean, you said it. You said it all. Like, we're of the exact same mind on this.
I know, as you know.
And I don't know if it's because we've talked about all the things so much or because we just feel the same way inherently. But yeah, I 100% to everything you said. And yes, I think the bigger concern is the lack of equity behind the scenes in some cases, and then how it's talked about in the world that's not really representative of what's happening in the work some of the time. That's the harder thing to grapple with, being inside of that for me, than the actual like fandom piece of it, because I totally get the fandom piece. But to Samantha's point, just as we were talking about the sort of internalized shame that a lot of people socialized as women in this country have and what these books can do to unlock that and help them let go of that, I think this lives in the same space. Some of this lives in that same space. And until we can, like, as a community, recognize that in ourselves as readers and experiencing these books, it's going to be hard to really see any outward change in that way.
I can say one tangible thing that maybe people can do is that a lot of times pay is a little bit different. I mean, folks have their different rates and that's what it is. But a lot of times people will be willing to pay a higher rate for a male narrator because of a perception that he's going to bring in higher sales. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's true because of this attention. And sometimes it's not true. As a producer, I've put some of those big names on books and they have not done well just because the name was there. But if you can make more buzz about, I'm buying this book because of the female narrator, or there are big releases that female narrator is excited for something and that you can help put those numbers behind, or at least make the connection of, this book was bought because of this female voice. I think that helps us advocate for ourselves and say, well, no, look at all these people who wanted to show up because we were a part of this.
Right.
Yeah.
I wonder how much, if there will be a shift as covers go away from Manchester covers toward not Manchester covers, more discreet covers. I wonder if when a reader isn't immediately being cued that the man is the lead character, if that equity balance will come into alignment a little bit. Because you definitely, I mean, we are in the middle of a shift of covers. Yeah. So like Avery's books are going from Manchester covers to discrete covers. Mm-hmm. And for me, that takes away the impetus to say, oh, these books are about the male characters, because they really aren't. Her work is very balanced. Mm-hmm. So that's I wonder if that's going to show across the industry. And I'd be interested to hear what your take
is. I love that perspective. Mm-hmm. I love that idea of what you're teed up for. And I mean, that goes both ways on this new thing, right? Like, you know, you can be writing a really dark romance that has a full page of trigger warnings and then put a cute cartoon on the front, and that's misleading to an audience. But in the same way that it's a really emotional, angsty story that, like, maybe only has a few spicy scenes, but it is the naked man on the cover, and that's telling you, well, this man is really what the story is about. And you're like, no, it's actually about this, like, other emotional narrative. So I think it's a really genius perspective, and I would be curious to see its impact.
I look forward to hearing feedback, so let me know.
I'm excited. I think we need to have more conversations.
Yes. I'm all about the conversations.
Part three.
Yes.
You are always serious. You are always welcome back.
Majority women. And I think, you know, hopefully, I know it's something that we strive to do, is women supporting other women, not tearing each other down, but elevating each other and bringing out that part of the community that says, I'm supporting you because I believe in what you do. I believe what you do should have an equitable side to it. I want to put your name out there and scream it from the rooftops because I want to do everything I can to support you as part of this community. Mm-hmm. And that the narrators are a huge part of it. Female narrators are a huge part of it. Mm-hmm. And I think there's an element to, I think, as more people come into the community and recognize the strength that we have within it, that hopefully it will maybe start to change that tide a little bit.
Yeah. I'd love to see a cultural shift of male narrators being really publicly supportive of their female narrators. I feel like a lot of times, because I know it's part of the fandom, I'll have a book out and be like, ooh, yes, wasn't Jason delicious in that? Oh, I know. Yes, they were so great. But you don't often, there's like, I can count on my hand the number of male narrators that sort of have that public display of respect and building up. And I think a lot of female narrators are really good. I mean, Rose and I mean, we're friends and colleagues and all these things, but I think that there's a culture amongst the female narrators to get a lot more excited because we have nothing to gain from it, but just mutual admiration of each other's work. And I'd love to see maybe some dudes will get on board.
And there definitely are. I know you said there definitely are some that are doing that for sure. Yeah. Just want to make sure that that's.
Yeah, it's not all men.
I think as we have narrators at cons and book signings, and you guys meet and build a connection between yourselves, that will also help.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, we're in this industry where we especially now are just in our own little boxes in our own homes. And there are people that I've worked with for 10 years that I only recently met, you know, and it makes, it does make a really big difference. And I've seen it impact even just like the way we work together. Like making that in-person connection really, really makes a difference. And I'm really grateful for that. And all of these things that we're talking about create a shifting of the tides. And I think, you know, Ron, just what you were saying about the book covers, I just wanted to add in, you know, it all goes back to that messaging, right? Like, again, with like, you come up in the world receiving certain messages, this community has been delivering a particular message about the characters in these books through their book covers. I think that's such a phenomenal point. And I think maybe that is one of the keys, right? Is let's shift the messaging as a industry, and there will be an effect in the community piece and the consumer piece and in their own feelings about it. I think that's I had never thought about that, and I think it's exactly right.
And I think that, thinking about it, it's amazing to think that way.
I think that it's a pendulum. I mean, I think that it's gone so far to the Manchester, it went so far that every book had that cover. And then now it's swinging back and they're all going to the discrete covers that sometimes are not necessarily in alignment with what the story is. But I think that when it comes back to the middle ground, I love a Manchester cover. We have great covers. Avery's covers are amazing. And the discrete ones are awesome too, because, and for me, they give the female characters in her book an opportunity to shine in a way that that when you're predisposed to it being a book about the guys, you don't necessarily give them bandwidth for. And I think that hopefully that'll translate to what's happening in the narration and in the marketing and all of that, so that it becomes a more equitable for everybody involved. For everybody involved.
Absolutely.
All right, so we're gonna do speed round because oh my gosh, it's
24.
So we're gonna do speed round.
Thank you so much for putting up with us.
Yeah. We talk a lot. It's a thing.
We talk for a living. We talk for a living. I was just
That's true. That's true. But we appreciate you taking the time from what you would be. I mean, because this is work time and we get that. So we are really appreciative of you taking that time to sit with us for a little bit and say, you know, hey, this is important and we want to have this conversation. And I know we really appreciate that part. So thank you. And the speed round's really, really easy. So we're just going to ask if it's in this or that. And each of you answer, and we're just going to go through it. It's just kind of a fun way to end since we were on like kind of a heavy topic.
I'm terrible at these.
Oh, no, you're fine.
Overthink it so much. I think that someone's going to take my answers to this and like come find me and be like, you said that you liked dogs over cats. Anyways, go on.
Dogs and cats were going to take off the list. Go ahead, Julie.
Okay, are you ready? Beach or lake?
I live on a lake, so I'm going to say beach because it's what I don't have access to.
Beach.
There you go. And you were just at the beach, right?
Me?
Yes.
Yes, I was.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yes.
Okay, coffee or tea?
Tea.
Depends on the time of day.
Okay, so she's not going to answer that one.
Coffee in the morning, tea after one.
Yep. Okay. Sweater or hoodie?
Hoodie.
Hoodie.
Jeans or sweats?
What's the occasion?
Yeah.
Where, this is very contextual.
We're the wrong people for this game.
Yeah, absolutely wrong.
Jeans?
I have like a full sweatsuit that I could dress up if I need. I'll see sweats. Regret it.
There's going to be a test after this.
Go ahead.
Pizza or tacos?
Tacos.
That one's amazing. Taco pizza.
Tacos. I really am as bad as I think I am. Go on.
Books or audios for yourself?
Audio.
Books.
Mm-hmm. Michelle?
Okay, so Kindle or paperback?
Paperback.
Kindle. Ooh. Oh, diversity there. I like it. Are you a planner for your reading? Or are you like a TBR? I'm going to plan it. Or are you just going to go with the flow, whatever just came up in your feed?
Ooh, I keep a great TBR, and then I love randomization, and then I just pick something off of it, like
cool.
Roll a dice or like blind pick. But I curate a short list.
I don't really know how to answer that question. I don't know. I guess I'm the second one mostly.
Okay. Go with the flow. Are you a frozen yogurt or ice cream fan?
Ice cream.
All right. Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Always dogs.
Never
cats. I apologize if you've been here. My dog fell asleep under my chair. She is a 98-pound Shepherd Roddy mix, and she snores like a rhinoceros with a cold. And I don't know if it's coming through, but mm-mm. Yeah. But thank you guys so
thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
This was so fun.
I really want to see if we can expand the conversation and, you know, create some more time to sit with some of these topics that we've come up with and get back together and talk about them a little bit more in depth, because it's important to me. I think it's important to all of us that these be explored and talked about and brought out a little bit into light. Thank you guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Really wonderful.